This is the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. A look inside the sweet science with Chris Mannix.
I will be always remembered as a winner.
Interviews.
Free and Freddie Roach, Hall of Fame trainer.
Analysis.
That is the thing Floyd's talking about right now.
And everything going on in the world of boxing.
I would have liked him to get to the bell to see what was what.
Post a rating or leave a comment on iTunes.
He smells bad.
About the podcast.
Oh.
And now a man who several people would like to punch in the face repeatedly. Chris Mannix.
All right, joining me this week is a frequent guest of the podcast. You've heard him here a few times before. You can read his stuff on Boxing Scene. It's Keith Idek, the senior boxing writer over at Boxing Scene. What's up, Keith? Welcome back.
Hey, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. A lot of boxing this past weekend. A lot of stuff coming up. As always, if you like this podcast, the best way to support it, head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating, subscribe, all that good stuff. It's simple. It's easy. It's free. Best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. All right, Keith, let's jump right into it. I was watching the Warrior game the other night, and who do I see sitting courtside but Anthony Joshua, the heavyweight champion, in the U.S., watching NBA basketball, finding himself on national TV. Now, we're all kind of wondering, you know, where we are with the negotiations for Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder. They've gone kind of quiet over these last couple of weeks, which I take, Keith, to be, you know, a good thing. When two sides are posturing in the press in the way that these two have and others have before, it generally means they're not talking to each other. The fact that they're not really talking to the media all that much, that tells me that, you know, maybe they are, you know, getting down to some details here. What do we know? What do you know about the status of these negotiations?
Well, I hope, as you said, Chris, that that's a positive sign that they're going about their business quietly and trying to make this fight. I'm not optimistic about that, though. I think Eddie's here to do some business for his new platform. I think, you know, he was in San Francisco, and obviously Anthony Joshua was at the Warriors game last night again. So I think he's here to do some business for that. I know that Al Haymon is supposed to be in New York tomorrow, on Thursday. So, you know, maybe they are going to meet. I don't know that for sure, but you'd hope they'd sit down and talk about this a little bit. But I still think we're in a situation where we were before, Chris, over the last couple of months when you and I've discussed it. I think that Anthony Joshua is going to fight someone else, probably Alexander Povetkin next. I think that Deontay Wilder is going to fight someone else next, probably Dominic Brazil. Then they'll revisit this again later this year. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they took another fight and didn't fight each other and put it off until sometime in 2019. I think that's what we're looking at this fight possibly happening in 2019, just like we thought all along.
Deontay Wilder made Joshua a $50 million offer. And that, you know, once I saw that in print, it kind of took me aback. And, you know, I first started wondering if the offer was real. You know, people close to the process assured me that it was a real offer. If that was a real offer, Keith, what are we doing here? Like, why are we having this conversation? If you're Anthony Joshua, can you expect to make more than $50 million fighting in the U.S. against Wilder? And even if you do, you know, the Wilder side made it clear that it wasn't just $50 million. It wasn't a flat fee. He could earn more if the fight takes off. Why is that not a no-brainer for Anthony Joshua?
Well, to answer your question, Chris, no, he can't make $50 million plus in one fight. What he can do is fight less dangerous opponents and fight two of them and make more money combined for those two fights than he would make to fight Deontay Wilder. I think that's the way Eddie Hearn is looking at this because, as we've seen, he can fight virtually anyone in the UK. They can get 75,000 to 90,000 people in a stadium, and it doesn't really matter who he's fighting. So if they can continue on that path and not really take much, you know, criticism in the UK, he's going to take criticism in the United States, but he probably wouldn't take much criticism there because they'll allow him to take a couple more fights, let the Wilder fight marinate, so to speak.
Why does he not take criticism in the UK?
Because he's an idol over there, you know, and I think people are willing to cut him some slack that they're not willing to cut him here. I'm not blaming this all on Anthony Joshua. I think, you know, gun to his head, Anthony Joshua would fight Deontay Wilder next. They're fighters. I'm not saying that he's afraid to fight him or anything, but from a business perspective, from Eddie Hearn's perspective, his cash cow would be better off fighting other guys and taking multiple fights and making a lot of money. Like he could, you know, just for argument's sake, say he fought three more times before he fought Deontay Wilder. He'd probably make over $100 million to fight three more times because he's becoming a bigger and bigger star every time that he fights. If he fights Alexander Povetkin next, And I know we've discussed this before, Chris. Alexander Povetkin has no business fighting for a title after testing positive for steroids multiple times or PEDs multiple times. But he's in that position. So he didn't look particularly good against David Price, I didn't think, despite that he knocked him out. I see that as a less dangerous fight for Joshua than I once did. So if he fought Povetkin next and then, you know, his other mandatory, you know, maybe he would fight the winner of Dillian White against Kubrat Pulev. The Dillian White rematch would be a big fight in the UK. That's the thing that we have from our side of it, you know, on the United States side of it, on our side of the pond, we want to see him fight Deontay Wilder. It's the biggest fight in boxing, right? Other than Canelo, Triple G, the biggest fight in boxing, right? So we want to see that. At the same time, over there, they don't really care who he fights. So it's a mega event every time Anthony Joshua fights. He can get away with fighting, you know, Dillian White, you know, Alexander Povetkin. And the one thing that I think we can't forget about here, Chris, and I know it's going to be a very hard fight to make because Tyson Fury is promoted by Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn promotes Anthony Joshua. It's like Bob Arum and Don King getting together to make a fight. But when the time came for Bob Arum and Don King to get together to make fights because so much money was at stake, they did it. I think the same principle will apply to Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren, and that's a huge fight in the UK, or to use their word, it's a massive fight over there, right? So if Tyson Fury can get his act together, at least temporarily, for 6 months to a year, get a couple of fights under his belt, who knows, maybe Anthony Joshua fights Tyson Fury before he fights Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're telling me that Tyson Fury could be ready to fight before the end of the year, I'd be all for a Fury-Joshua fight. I mean, look, Fury, you know, for all his warts, is still... you know, the lineal, if you want to use that word, champion. You know, nobody's beaten him in the ring to take his titles from him. It would be a massive fight. And it would be a relevant fight, too. The problem is, I don't believe for a second that, you know, 6 months to a year from now, Tyson Fury is going to be ready to take on that type of challenge. I think he needs at least three fights before he's ready to fight an Anthony Joshua. And if he takes it before then, I think he's going to get flattened. He might get flattened anyway, but I think it's a bad move from Frank Warren if they put Tyson Fury in before that. But it's maddening to, and I agree with you, but it's maddening to hear you say that the UK press and the UK fans just let this guy, Joshua, you know, get away with this stuff. I mean, he's got three pieces of the heavyweight title. He should be required to go out there and unify if the opponent is a pretty big star, and Deontay Wilder could be a bigger star, but he's a pretty big star in the U.S., To brazenly kind of avoid him like this is embarrassing. If you're Anthony Joshua, if you're Eddie Hearn, I know what Eddie's doing. I mean, everything you said is true, but you know, you got to make this fight. You got to do it sooner rather than later, because if you fight Povetkin over the summer, then you fight the winner of White Pulev at the end of the year, you're talking at the earliest the middle of 2019 before you make the second biggest fight in all of boxing. That's just, to me, that's unacceptable. I don't know why it's not more unacceptable to the people that cover Joshua over in the UK and the fans of him over there as well.
Yeah, I agree with you to a certain extent, Chris. But like I said, when you can make this kind of money...
You're not allowed to disagree with me on the podcast. That's not... it's a dictatorship.
I think, though, that, you know, I don't think they care, to be honest with you. We're getting a lot of mixed messages from their side of it. Eddie Hearn saying, you know, it's a $50 million offer, and if it's a real offer, we'll listen to it. Then he says, yeah, but the fight has to be in the UK, and we have to know all the conditions. I do understand to an extent what he meant in the beginning about, well, we have to find out what's going on here before we just blindly say yes to this. That I do understand, because I know the fight wouldn't be in Alabama because you wouldn't be able to generate the kind of money they were paying if the fight was in Birmingham or something like that, of course. But he wanted to find out, where is it? Is there a rematch clause in the contract? And all the other things that are involved in contracts, he just wanted to know some of those parameters. Now, I don't think he would have said yes even if they satisfied him in every way. But he wanted to know some of those things, so I kind of didn't understand it from the perspective of the other side by saying, we don't even want to sit down and talk to Eddie, we just want him to say yes. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's really fair either. I mean, while, yes, $50 million is a lot of money, and plus some upside potentially, I don't really know that that's fair just to say, oh, you have to say yes or we're not even going to talk to you. That doesn't really make sense to me. But at the same time, Eddie comes out of this looking bad because... He threw a crazy number out there, $50 million. They said, okay, we'll make sure you make $50 million. And one of the things that Eddie said that I found, I didn't really understand when he said it, he's like, well, how much money is Deontay Wilder making out of all this? How is he going to be paid, you know, more than the $12.5 million that I offered him, or you know, anywhere close to what Anthony Joshua was going to make? And my answer to that would be, why is that your business? Whatever chance Deontay Wilder is willing to take on the upside or whatever his side is telling him about how much money he can make, that's his business. And if he doesn't wind up making that kind of money if they do fight, that's their problem to deal with. Eddie Hearn still walks away with it, with at least $50 million, and his guy got what he wanted out of it. So one other interesting thing, Chris, while I was driving over here to do the podcast, Anthony Joshua actually did an interview on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith, and he was saying that he would fight Deontay Wilder in the United States. He wants the fight to happen next, and he'll do it in the United States, and let's do it in the biggest place possible. So they threw the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, which could accommodate 100,000 fans for that fight, right? I don't know that that's necessarily a real place where that fight could take place, but he said, yeah, let's fight him in Cowboys Stadium. So you have him saying that he'll come here to fight him next in Cowboys Stadium, Eddie Hearn saying that the fight has to take place in the UK. Which is it?
Yeah. I honestly wish that, you know, nothing against Stephen A. Smith, but an interview like that, and then I'll admit, as we're speaking here, I didn't hear it. I wish that a Max Kellerman did an interview like that, somebody that kind of understands the nuances of boxing and knows what goes on, what is going on behind the scenes. I mean, the idea of Cowboy Stadium is stupid because, you know, you put a Mexican in Cowboy Stadium like Canelo Alvarez or an established American pay-per-view star like a Manny Pacquiao, you can sell the number of tickets that you're talking about, right? You can you know, have a mega event there. Anthony Joshua versus Deontay Wilder doesn't come close to selling out Cowboy Stadium. I don't know that, look, I don't know the demographics of Texas necessarily in terms of boxing fans, but I would imagine neither one of them are household names in the state of Texas. The reason Vegas works is because of the money Vegas puts up. I mean, Vegas isn't beholden to, you know, the MGM Grand wants to sell out T-Mobile Arena, but you know, they can price the tickets accordingly to make their money back. They can put up $20 million, $25 million, more maybe in a license fee to make it work. The idea that Cowboy Stadium would even be in the mix, which it's not, by the way, is just kind of goofy to me.
Right, Chris, because he'd have to bring over, if you're going to fill Cowboy Stadium for that fight, are 75,000 people coming here from the United Kingdom to help do that? It makes no sense, right?
No,
and if you're going to do that and you're going to put it in a stadium, just put it at Wembley Stadium and they don't have to travel. You know, you're guaranteed many more people, which, you know, I don't think that that's a bad idea necessarily. While I think the fight obviously would make more money here because, as you said, in Vegas, they throw a lot of money around. They could make it worth everyone's while to go and do the fight there and they would ultimately make more money. If you want to make it a bigger event, without question, the fight should be in the UK because they would pack Wembley Stadium again. They do 90,000 people again, and it's an enormous event. They probably come away with less money because they charge less for tickets. But for an event like that, you could charge a premium for tickets because it would be the biggest fight in boxing at that point.
Here's my problem with putting this fight off, too. It's, you know, look, it was maddening to go through the Mayweather-Pacquiao stuff, but ultimately, you know, I begrudgingly would say that, you know, as business people, they were right. I mean, the fight turned into the biggest fight in boxing history. They both walked away with hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't think we could have said that had the fight first come off in 2010 and, you know, they had a rematch. I don't think they would have made as much money. So, you know, kudos to them, you know, from a business standpoint for doing that. I don't know, Keith, and maybe you disagree, but I don't know that this fight gets markedly bigger over the next year because there aren't the opponents. I mean, Mayweather continued to build up his name from, you know, 2009 when that Pacquiao fight first loomed as a possibility, you know, to 2015 by fighting, you know, the Miguel Cotto's and the Ricky Hattons and you know, all these kind of big name fighters in and around the welterweight division. There just aren't those fighters at the heavyweight level. I mean, if Joshua fights Povetkin and then he fights, let's say, Dillian White, does he become a bigger star in the U.S.? Does he make pay-per-view money in the U.S.? I don't think so. If Wilder fights Dominic Brazil and whoever, you know, before the end of the year, does that make that fight that much bigger? I think whether it's now or 2019, there's not a measurably bigger financial impact it can make. Yes, what you said before is right. You know, Joshua can make some money fighting nobody in the U.K. because they just let him skate over there with no criticism whatsoever. But in terms of building up a Wilder fight, I don't believe it gets bigger over the next year plus.
I agree with you, Chris. And also from Deontay Wilder's perspective, he wants this fight next. He's 32 years old.
Yes, that's another part of it. 33 in October.
Right. And while he's making, you know, he's making a lot of money in comparison to regular people, of course, but he made, you know, $2 million was his reported purse for his last, a little over $2 million for the Luis Ortiz fight. So he's making good money, but, you know, he's got kids to take care of and a family to feed, you know, and a future to look out for. And this is the best way possible to secure that future. He wants this fight right away because one thing we all learned, and I think we knew this going in, but we're reminded of it on March 3rd, is that if you keep taking risks against guys who can punch, big, strong guys, you know, he might not fight someone who's as good as Luis Ortiz moving forward as he tries to get to the Joshua fight. But if you keep fighting big, strong guys that can punch, this fight is going to be ruined. One of these guys is going to get knocked out by somebody, yep. and then the fight's going to go away and never have happened. Like, in some respects, Riddick Bowe and Lennox Lewis, the fight never happened. You know, Lennox, obviously, you know, from Jamaica, the UK, whatever, but he was never as big of a star in the UK as Anthony Joshua. And I would argue, that Riddick Bowe was a bigger star at his time than Deontay Wilder is now, having fought Holyfield and all that. You know, he was probably a bigger star in the U.S. But that fight never happened, and it was at the time when Mike Tyson was in prison, and that was the fight in the heavyweight division, and it never happened. So are we going to be at the point where this becomes the Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis of, you know, of this generation? Maybe.
Yeah, let me say one more thing that I think would help move this along. And I hate sanctioning bodies, like, in general. I think they all suck, and they all are corrupt on some level. But, you know, one thing the sanctioning bodies could do is that they could make, you know, Wilder in the case of the, you know, Joshua's three titles, or Joshua in the case of Wilder's one title, make them the mandatory. And they've done it before. You know, remember when the Kovalev-Stevenson stuff was going on? You know, they've used sort of a mandatory status for a title holder of another division. They've done that before. If you do that, maybe it forces some action, because in no division other than heavyweight are the titles more valuable. The heavyweight title is the most valuable commodity in boxing. Heavyweights do not want to give up their belts. You saw that with Vladimir Klitschko, and you've seen it in the past with other fighters. If you make, you know, Wilder the mandatory for Joshua's titles, if those sanctioning bodies, the WBO, the IBF, and the WBA, they got together and said, not together, they just said, Deontay Wilder is the mandatory challenger. If you don't fight him, we're going to strip you of your title. That could move the needle a little bit. That could get the ball rolling. I have no expectation for that, Keith, because sanctioning bodies are awful, and they have no integrity whatsoever. But that would at least move the needle, kick the ball down the road a little bit.
It would definitely be a step in the right direction, Chris. But remember, when the WBC made Sergey Kovalev the mandatory for Adonis Stevenson, and we thought, hey, we're going to finally see the Stevenson-Kovalev fight that everyone wants to see at light heavyweight, what happened? His promoter pulled out of the Kovalev's promoter pulled out of the purse bid, and the fight still hasn't happened. And now Kovalev has lost twice. You know, whether you think he really lost or not, he has two losses on his record to Andre Ward. Yada yada yada. We're 3 years more down the road, and they still haven't fought. And, you know, based on what we saw from Adonis Stevenson on Saturday night, I mean, I don't know how much longer he's even going to fight. But we never saw that fight. And, you know, and you're right in the sense that heavyweights love their titles. I think all boxers love their titles. I sat yesterday, speaking of sanctioning bodies, Chris, I sat at the IBF hearing at a hotel in Newark, New Jersey for Gennady Golovkin and Sergey Derevyanchenko. And Golovkin flew all the way from California and sat through one of the most monotonous meetings that I've ever heard in my entire life, with just a bunch of, you know, legal mumbo jumbo going back and forth for nearly 5 hours. But his title was that important to him that he was there for that. So the titles are very important to them. Then again, going back to the Riddick Bowe Lennox Lewis days, we did see a heavyweight champion throw a heavyweight title belt in the garbage can.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that, yeah, you're right. I mean, the Bowe example is the most glaring one of a guy giving up his belt. But I think Joshua, if forced to potentially give up three belts, I think that would move the needle. But you're right about the Kovalev Stevenson stuff. The WBC backed off that as soon as they couldn't get agree on terms. So who knows? I just like to see this fight sooner rather than later. All right, you mentioned Adonis Stevenson, my favorite fighter, Keith, of all time. I love me some Adonis Stevenson. You know why? Because he takes on all comers. Because Adonis Stevenson never says no to anyone, at least back in 2013. Last 5 years, though, he's been playing duck and cover with this WBC title. The fight, though, with Badu Jack this past weekend, I'll give them both credit, it was a pretty good fight. You know, you saw Stevenson controlled the early rounds. Jack came on at the end. Stevenson threw a hell of a body shot that I was surprised Jack took, I think, at the 10th round and survived. It was scored officially a draw. What did you think of that fight, the performances by both?
I thought a draw was fair, Chris, because unfortunately for Badu Jack, he's left with another draw on his record, but he really doesn't have anyone to blame but himself.
Not Floyd Mayweather, by the way.
I like Badu Jack. He's a nice guy. He's a humble guy, very easy for us to deal with, the kind of guy that you want to see, you know, make real money in boxing and succeed and everything for his family. At the same time, it's absurd that he's blaming the judge's dislike for Floyd Mayweather for him continually being in these close fights. Part of it is that he fought very high-level guys that were competitive fights, except for the Lucien Boutte fight, which was changed to a disqualification win for him because Boutte failed a PED test after the fight. I thought he clearly won that fight. But the fight against James DeGale was a very close fight. I didn't think a draw was completely unfair. If I would have favored one guy, it would have been Badu Jack, but I didn't think that was a crazy decision. But clearly, his other fights, he's had split decisions, majority decisions. I think five of his last six fights have been either, you know, draws, majority decisions, or split decisions. He's a high-level fighter, but on Saturday in particular, he gave away the first three rounds of that fight. He didn't even start fighting until the fourth round. So you can't give away three fights on the home turf of the defending champion and then complain when you don't get the decision. You can't do. And I understand why he was wary in the beginning of that fight. Stevenson can really punch, so he didn't want to get clipped early in that fight. You know, he had been knocked out in the first round by Derek Edwards 4 years ago. He had to be very mindful of Stevenson's power. I completely understand that. But you have to do. And I'm not saying that Stevenson was the most accurate or active guy in the first three rounds either. But Jack wasn't doing anything. So you're giving away rounds as you're getting toward the midway point in the fight. And then when he did start fighting, he was fantastic. And Stevenson started to tire. He's 41 years old. He never fights. So he was starting to fatigue in the fight. And then, as you said, Chris, in the 10th round, he caught him with that straight left hand to the body that really changed the entire complexion of the fight. Had he not landed that punch, the way that Adonis Stevenson was going in terms of his energy level and the amount of punches he was throwing, I wouldn't have been surprised if Badu Jack stopped him before the end of the fight. But that fight that punch gave Stevenson the breathing room that he needed for a round and a half or so to kind of get back in the fight and make it to the final bell.
All right, so what did you think of Stevenson's performance in general? Because we don't have a lot of body of work, as you said. He never fights. I mean, he's almost a calendar year removed from his last fight before this when he fought Funfara. Before that, it was almost a year since he fought Thomas Williams Jr. Before that, it was almost a year when he fought Tommy Carpensi. He's not fighting top-tier guys, and so I don't really know if, when I look at him fight this past weekend, I don't know if he's lost a step. He is 40, going to be 41 pretty soon. Do you think he's, how much of a step slow is he, if any, from his heyday back in 2013?
Well, he definitely looked like an older guy the other night. He'll be 41 in September, so he is slowing down a little bit. He didn't look like he was in. Although he did weigh in almost 2 pounds below the light heavyweight limit of 175, he didn't look like he was in phenomenal shape in the ring on Saturday night. He looked slow. He wasn't able to throw a lot of punches. He seemed tired to me by the fifth or sixth round. And look, you know, if you're a world champion in 12 round fights, and he has fought 12 rounds before, it's not like he was knocking everyone out in the first four or five rounds. He's gone the distance before. He just looked tired and older to me. And Floyd Mayweather actually had said before the fight, he said, look, you know, Floyd is clearly a much, much, much better fighter than Adonis Stevenson or anyone else for the most part that's fought into their 40s. But he said, I noticed a huge difference, even fighting Conor McGregor, who didn't even belong in the ring with Floyd. But he said, look, I was a lot different when I was 40 than even when I was 35. He was 36 when he fought Canelo, and he used that as an example. He said, I felt much different when I fought Canelo, who was much, much younger than Floyd and clearly in his physical prime, than I felt when I fought Conor McGregor, a much lesser fighter. And he said, I expect Adonis Stevenson to feel that in the ring and to sort of show that in the ring on Saturday night. And that's what happened.
I expect there to be a rematch. I mean, both fighters talked about it. You know, the Leonard Ellerby was there calling for it after the fight. They're both Showtime guys, so you can make that fight pretty easily. But I'd like to see them go outside first and fight one other fight. I mean, you've got other title holders in this division. I mean, the Stevenson-Kovalev fight, if Kovalev wins his upcoming title defense against Alvarez, it's lost the relevancy it once had, you know, when both these guys were just monsters in their respective divisions. But I'd still want to see that, you know, somewhere up in Canada to see, you know, which of these two punchers can knock the other out. At the same time, I mean, you know, if you're Badu Jack, I mean, you know, Dmitry Bivol is out there looking for an opponent. He's got a title around his waist. Now, I know the network problems and the promotional problems make those fights far more difficult than a rematch between Jack and Stevenson, but I'd like them to at least try, to at least, you know, look outside the box a little bit before they go into an immediate rematch. Do you want to see the rematch first, or would you like to see them go and look for other opponents?
I would like to see the rematch. If it doesn't happen, I'm sort of fine with that, too. Ratings-wise, it didn't do a great number for Showtime, and they, you know, they obviously spent a fair amount of money on the license fee, so it would have to go back to Canada. I know Badu Jack was saying that they would, you know, he would like the fight in Vegas or somewhere, you know, Sweden maybe, or something like that.
I don't think Adonis can get into Vegas.
And all kidding aside, you know, Mayweather even said that after the fight. I don't think he can leave the country. So yeah. I think they're resigned to the fact that if they do have a rematch, it's going to be in Canada, hopefully in Montreal if they do it, because that's where this fight belonged. At Toronto, he's Canadian, but he has no business fighting in Toronto either. The guy's
he's not even a big star in Canada. He's not. Jean Pascal is a star in Canada. Mm-hmm. Like Boutte was a star in Canada. I don't know about you, but I don't put Stevenson on that level.
Well, I think the reason being, Chris, is he could have gotten to that level,
sure,
where Boutte and Pascal got. But he wouldn't. He was taking the types of fights that you mentioned earlier, these optional defenses against people no one wanted to see him fight. And I think people got tired of it a little bit. You know, he obviously has a criminal history, you know, a checkered past, to say the least. So, you know, maybe that's turned some people off also. But he is a French Canadian, though. He's been there since he's 5 years old. He was born in Haiti, but he's been in Quebec most of his life, so in the Montreal area. But anyway, the rematch belongs in Montreal. They would do a much better. I think they did about 5,000 the other night, and that's only because, well, one, it didn't belong in Toronto, but two, they only put the fight in Toronto on about 3.5-4 weeks notice after the fight was supposed to be at the Bell Center in Montreal, and there was some kind of, I never really got the straight story. I did ask Yvonne Michel, Stevenson's promoter, and he said he didn't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but whatever the reason was, the fight should have been in Montreal. The rematch should be in Montreal. But just to go back to what you said earlier, Chris, the reason why I don't think there'll be an immediate rematch, and I would like to still see Stevenson fight Kovalev, although I think Kovalev has a tough fight against Eleider Alvarez on August 4th in Atlantic City. I don't think that's going to be an easy fight for Kovalev. But beyond that, Alexander Vostik is the WBC interim light heavyweight champion, and they're going to pursue it legally if he does not fight Adonis Stevenson next. They think that it's their turn. They don't care about a rematch with Badu Jack or anything else. They want Vostik to get his title shot. And if there was ever a time that you would want your guy, who's a young, you know, he's about 30 or so, if there was ever a time you want your guy to fight Adonis Stevenson, it's now.
Well, of course it happens, though, right, Keith? The WBC will enforce that mandatory, because that's what they do, right? Because integrity is in their middle fucking name. That's what they're going to do. 2013 was the last time that Stevenson fought a mandatory. I understand that people in boxing don't love these mandatory fights because they're generally against nobodies. I mean, nobody was clamoring for Golovkin to fight Derevyanchenko, but you got to have some rules here that you follow, people. So, look, I don't have any expectation the WBC is going to make him fight that guy.
That may well be true, Chris. The other thing to consider is if Alvarez does upset Kovalev on August 4th, then Alvarez, who was Stevenson's mandatory for two and a half years, for God's
amazing
sake, then he would fight Stevenson in what would then become a big unification fight in Quebec. Well, neither guy is really from Canada. I mean, you know, Alvarez came from Colombia in 2009, and as I mentioned before, Stevenson was born in Haiti. But that would be a big fight in Montreal, or about as big a fight as you could make now there, you know, now that Pascal is, you know, at the back end of his career. I think he's going to continue to fight. But, you know, that boxing has kind of died down a little bit in Quebec as opposed to what it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But that would be a big fight in Quebec. And Yvonne Michel promotes both guys. It would be an easy fight for them to make. So I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on August 4th, is if, you know, if Alvarez does win that fight, then that's who Stevenson would fight next. And somehow, as you mentioned earlier, Chris, the WBC would make Vostik wait for his title shot. And somehow come up with, you know, this, he was the mandatory anyway, and he never got his shot, and blah, blah, blah.
All right, the other fight from that card this weekend was Gary Russell Jr. Defending his title against JoJo Diaz, still the featherweight champion. He's been unbeaten since getting smoked by Vasily Lomachenko back in 2014 But he's also incredibly inactive, another inactive fighter that we're talking about here, Keith. I mean, what did you think of Russell's performance in that fight? And, you know, look, is he as disappointing to you as he is to me? Because Gary Russell has a lot of talent. I mean, this kid is fast. He's got good hands. He's got decent power. But he just, every time I hear him speak, he doesn't sound like a guy that wants to be great. Now, he's talked about a unification fight with the winner of Mares Santa Cruz. He's talked about moving up. Maybe Tank Davis could be in his future. But based on his history and the fact that he already is talking about a hand problem, I don't expect to see Gary Russell Jr. until 2019. So, you know, what did you think of his performance and what he is as a fighter?
I thought he looked great on Saturday night, especially for a guy who was coming off almost exactly a one-year layoff. He hadn't fought since the previous May 20th. So, you know, on May 19th, you know, he comes in there and looks as good as he did in his previous fights against a better fighter. Jojo Diaz can fight. I think he, despite that he clearly lost the fight, I think Jojo Diaz helped his cause a little bit on Saturday night too, because people thought that he was going to get, or some people certainly thought that he was going to get knocked out by Gary Russell. He took everything that Gary Russell had. And while, you know, Russell clearly took over the fight in the second half, I thought Diaz hung tough. He showed he can take a punch. He went to the body very well. I don't think he was done any favors by the referee, Kenny Chevalier, who seemed to, you know, admonish him for everything that he did almost. But I thought Jojo Diaz fought well the other night. And while he's not on Gary Russell's level, clearly, I think if I would like to see him fight Abner Mares or Leo Santa Cruz, you know, of course, I want to see the winner of that fight Russell first, but I think there are many options for Jojo Diaz moving forward. But as far as Russell goes, he's one of the most talented guys in boxing, Chris. And as you said, he's very frustrating because you only see him once a year or so. He won the title, the WBC featherweight title, in March of 2015. He's only fought three times since then. Every time you see him, he's impressive. You know, before he fought Diaz, he won his previous two fights, you know, against lesser opponents, but stopped both guys. He's got ridiculous hand speed, a lot of athleticism. He moves very well. He's got a lot of power. As a pretty good chin too. He's always shown a good chin. So he's an extremely talented guy. But he's almost 30 years old now too. I think he turns 30 next month. So the reason I think that he doesn't fight as much as people would like to see him fight is he does have hand problems. He doesn't talk about it much, but he does have hand problems, and I think that's part of it for him. I also think that he makes a lot of money when he fights, even for fights that the vast majority of even boxing fans aren't all that excited about. But, you know, excluding this one, I think people were interested in this fight, but he makes a lot of money. So the other night, his reported purse was $1.4 million. So if you're him, you made $1.4 million, you go away for 8 or 9 months or whatever, and then you and your hands start feeling better, and then you fight again. I'm not saying it's a great blueprint to become a star, because it obviously isn't, but I think he's okay with that.
Yeah, I think it does, though, put a ceiling on how much money he can make. I mean, nobody's sniffing their nose at $1.5 million. But, I mean, if he waits till next year to fight somebody, it's probably what he's going to get once again. Whereas maybe if he strikes now and faces the winner of Mares Santa Cruz, which, by the way, I think he's a favorite against either one of those guys. I think, you know, Santa Cruz, the more wars that Santa Cruz is in, the lesser fighter I think he's going to be. And I think Mares, even though he's done a pretty good job of kind of rallying in the last couple of years, I think I would take Russell over Mares as well. If they could get together and make that fight, and they should, by the way, since they're all represented by Al Haymon, they should be able to kind of come to the table and make a deal. You know, you win that fight at the end of the year, all of a sudden, you know, you're a pretty big star. I mean, not a pay-per-view star necessarily, but you're making more than $1.5 million to fight each time out.
If I were advising Gary Russell Jr., this is what I would do, Chris. I would say, make sure you get me in the ring with the winner of the Mares Santa Cruz rematch. You know,
after the fight, you mean, right afterwards.
In November, December, whenever that might be, you know, get me in the ring with that guy.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Crash of the Party, man. I would do this, but I would do that too. Like, you know, I mean, like, how often do we see that happen? And it's kind of effective. Like, if it's, you know, if Santa Cruz wins by knockout, all of a sudden you have Gary Russell, who, by the way, his win will still be fresh in people's minds when that fight takes place on June 9th. I'd get the ball rolling right away, man.
That's actually a great idea, Chris. I don't expect to see that happen in Los Angeles on June 9th, but I would have him fight the winner of that fight. It's a big Showtime would obviously be very interested in it. I think boxing fans would be interested in a featherweight title unification fight. Have them fighting, you know, late in the fall or whatever. And then the fight that you mentioned that is very intriguing is if he were to fight Gervonta Davis. Of course, he would have to move up, you know, 4 pounds to super featherweight to do that, assuming that Gervonta Davis stays at 130 pounds. But that fight would be a big, big fight in the Baltimore, D.C. area. You know, Gervonta Davis is becoming he's going to sell tickets. You know, his last fight at the Barclays Center, where Adrian Broner was in the main event against Jesse Vargas, we were there that night, Chris, and there were a lot of people from Baltimore there. When Gervonta Davis came into the ring, people were going crazy. So he was the first fight of the three TV fights, but people were going nuts for him, and he sold thousands of tickets that night. If you get him closer to his home base in Baltimore, I know they've wanted to do a fight at an arena in downtown Baltimore. You know, maybe they can do that at some point later this year, but I think that would be a big fight down there, you know, because Gary Russell's from Capitol Heights, Maryland, right outside of D.C. That would be a big fight, but, you know, Gary Russell, he'd be facing a bigger guy, a younger guy, in Gervonta Davis, who's 23, and Gary Russell, as we mentioned earlier, is going to be 30 soon. So he'd be in there with a guy who physically he's not outclassing and who's younger than him and who can punch and who's more natural at the weight. It would be a big risk for Gary Russell Jr. to take, but if he were paid handsomely for it, and as I said, if he goes and wins another featherweight title, I don't know what's really left for him at featherweight. He could fight Carl Frampton or someone like that, but as far as moving the needle and getting people interested in being in what would be considered in boxing circles a mega fight, that would be very interesting for him. And I think Davis would be interested in it also, because other than fighting Lomachenko, who, whether you believe Floyd Mayweather or not, in terms of him really wanting to put Davis in the ring with Lomachenko, there's nothing else really there for Davis either. So him and Gary Russell would be a hell of a fight.
What do you think of Davis as a fighter? Because, you know, in the last couple of weeks, and maybe months, if you want to talk about when Mayweather started calling Top Rank about a Lomachenko fight, we've seen some very public shows of support for Gervonta Davis. I saw Errol Spence say, you know, that Davis would smoke Lomachenko. I maybe want something of what Spence is smoking, you know, believe in that. But, you know, there seems to be a lot of confidence in Davis's future. I think he's a really fun fighter to watch, but I still need to see more before I think he's on the level of Russell or he's on the level of Lomachenko. What do you think of him?
Sure, you'd have to see him against some better guys, of course, Chris. But I'll tell you, Jesus Cuellar is not a bum, and
right.
he blew Jesus Cuellar out. Like Morris had a very tough fight. Think of
Pedraza too. Pedraza's a good fighter.
Absolutely,
and that was, you know, when he first won that title.
Yeah, and he smoked him to win the title. You know, last January. You know, he's a very talented kid. If his head is screwed on straight, which it appears to be now that he's training with Kevin Cunningham down in Florida and has gotten away from some of the distractions in the Baltimore area, you know, this kid, if he really keeps focus and he stays training, you know, and he comes into fights fully focused with his head on the right way, this kid's going to be a problem for anyone. And he's a really strong guy. I was really impressed. You know, people after the, you know how it tends to go, Chris, you know, after a fight, before a fight, they say, oh, this is going to be a tough fight for Gervonta Davis. And then he blows out Jesus Cuellar. And they're like, oh, well, Cuellar stinks. But that's not really fair. I mean, you know, Morris had a very tough fight with Cuellar. He put him down in that fight. But that was only, what was that, 15, 16 months before Davis did that to him. And Cuellar is not an old guy.
Right.
So, he was coming off a long layoff and he was moving up in weight. But I was very impressed with what he did that night. But the problem for Gervonta Davis is what is left for him at 130 pounds. The Lomachenko fight obviously would be a big fight, but I would think that Lomachenko is more going to go, while it's a very difficult fight to make, I think Lomachenko is going to go more in the direction of Mikey Garcia, assuming he wins his fight in August, which I expect to be against Ray Beltran, and I would expect him to win that fight. So I think Lomachenko and Mikey Garcia, despite Garcia's history with Top Rank, I think they're going to be kind of on a collision course here to fight at lightweight. And then what's left for Gervonta Davis? You know, if he's going to have a big fight anytime soon, you know, a guy like Gary Russell makes sense if Gary Russell's willing to move up and do it. I mean, we're playing fantasy boxing here, but at the same time, that would be a big fight for him. And I know he wants to fight Tevin Farmer, and while Tevin Farmer's a very good boxer, doesn't have a lot of power, that's a fight that's interesting to Gervonta Davis and Tevin Farmer because they have this rivalry, but it's not a needle-moving fight by any stretch.
Worth watching, too, when it comes to Davis, is how things shake out with him and Mayweather Promotions. It does seem like there's some real friction there between Davis and Mayweather. I don't think Davis loved the idea of Mayweather calling Top Rank, trying to set up a Lomachenko fight, nor did I think he liked the suggestion that he fight Robert Easter as well. So I think, you know, there's still a contract there. I think it's a couple more years for Davis and Mayweather Promotions, but that's worth watching to see if somebody swoops in and tries to steal him from that promotion company. All right, let me finish with Tony Bellew, who I start to like more and more. I don't think I didn't even like Bellew back in like 2013. I thought he was an average guy back then. But since he's, you know, been winning a cruiserweight title, moving up to heavyweight, how he effectively ended the career of David Haye, you know, he's a fun fighter. And, you know, certainly someone that can sell tickets in the UK and bring some money to the table with him. Tony Bellew wants Andre Ward. And, you know, we've discussed in the past the possibility that Ward will come out of retirement and take a big fight. I don't think there's a bigger or more winnable fight for Andre Ward out there than Tony Bellew. He'd have to go up and wait to fight. You know, I think Bellew said he'd fight just under the cruiserweight limit, 196, 195, something like that. But it's a good fight for both these guys. Do you think that Ward comes out of retirement? And if you do, do you think he takes that fight?
I would if I were him. Because the only thing is the weight is a factor here, right? I don't think Andre Ward should be moving up, and you know, 196 is that's pushing it too. That's 20 pounds above the light heavyweight limit. And while Andre Ward's a pretty, you know, he's about 6 foot, a little over 6 foot, he's not a small guy by any stretch. But Bellew is accustomed to fighting at a higher weight. He's a smaller heavyweight, obviously, but and he'd have to, you know, adjust to coming back down in weight. So that might be a factor in the fight. Also, he hasn't weighed in, you know, below the heavyweight limit for a while, so that could be a factor there for Andre Ward. But Andre Ward could make a lot of money for that fight, just go over to the UK and do it. So if you're looking at it from a risk-reward standpoint, if you're Andre Ward, I would definitely do that. And with the kind of money that Eddie Hearn has now with this new platform that he has, the money is there. It's real money. If you're Andre Ward and you're going to make more to fight Tony Bellew in the UK than you made even for the Kovalev fights, both of which he was overpaid to take, I don't know how he doesn't consider it. He's not old. I mean, the guy's 34 years old, and he hasn't taken a ton of punishment in his fights. You know, the Kovalev fights were rough fights, of course, but he's not like a shop-worn guy. He's not 40. He's 34, you know, and he's preserved himself well physically. The question is, you know, once you shut it down, and he's been retired now for whatever, 9 months, 8 months, whatever it is. You know, once you shut it down mentally, can you get back to that point? Because he has said since he retired, Chris, you know, I didn't have it in me to, it's not the fights, you know, the fights are for the most part, the easy part. You know, once you, it's all the training and all of the physical rigors that they go through in training camp. I mean, people sometimes don't even realize what these guys go through in camp. I mean, you know, just taking a pounding and sparring and all the road work. And, you know, when you get into your 30s and then, you know, getting out of bed for old guys like me, Chris, you know, it's a rough day, you know, and these guys are taking a pounding every day and sparring, and, you know, so you just imagine how they might feel physically. So, you know, if he can get past that mental hurdle of, you know, of kind of recalibrating himself and getting ready to fight again, I don't see why he wouldn't do it. There's too much money there. And it's not like Tony Bellew is a huge puncher, you know. He seems like a fantastic person. And again, like Badu Jack, the kind of guy you would want to make as much money for him and his family as possible. Seems like a very good, grounded guy. But he's not the most dangerous guy in the world. I mean, because who knows what to make? How much of what he did against David Haye was David Haye being, you know, an injury prone shot fighter? And how much of it was Tony Bellew just being, you know, a world class heavyweight? Probably somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And look, if I'm Andre Ward, and the clock's ticking, because I agree with everything you said about, you know, there's only so much time that can pass before you're not mentally able to get back into it, willing to put in the work to fight at a championship level. I don't think that time has passed, but, you know, by the end of this year, it might have. And if you're Andre Ward and you're looking for a challenge, and you and I both know, Andre Ward's talked about going to heavyweight. When he was going to sign that deal with HBO to fight, I think, 4 or 5 times, you know, for the network, one of those fights, at least one, was going to be at a higher weight class. So moving up has always been on the radar of Andre Ward. And this is the ideal fight. I'm with you on David Haye. I mean, would Tony Bellew have beaten David Haye like 3 years ago? I don't know. Maybe, but I think David Haye is a far different fighter, largely because of, you know, the injury issues and just being a little bit older and shop-worn. And beyond that, it's not like, you know, Bellew's resume is deep with quality wins. I mean, he moved up and beat Cleverly. You know, he beat BJ Flores. I mean, like, it's not like there's this murderer's row of opponents that he's beaten that makes you scared of him. Like, give him all the credit in the world for doing what he's done and turning himself at age 35 into a legitimate draw in the UK. But I would, honestly, if it's at like 195, I'd favor Andre Ward in a fight like that. I think Ward is too technical. I think he'd fluster Tony Bellew. I think there's a lot of things he can do that would be successful against Tony. So if I'm Andre Ward, I'm running towards that fight, especially if you have, you know, that Eddie Hearn money that's behind it.
Yeah, Chris, I agree. Andre Ward is so smart that if he takes this Tony Bellew fight, he knows that he can't lose. He sees things in Tony Bellew, especially at a lower weight than heavyweight, that lead him to believe that he can't lose that fight. Andre Ward has been a masterful matchmaker. He's been brilliant the way he's handled his career. If he takes the fight, and the money, of course, is a lure. No two ways about it. It's a lot of money that he'd be offered from Eddie Hearn. But beyond that, I think he sees it. He would see it as a safe fight for a lot of money, as opposed to coming back. You know, why would Andre Ward come back, Chris, to fight at light heavyweight? He's not going to fight Kovalev again. Whatever we think of what happened in the two fights, it doesn't matter. I mean, he has two wins over Kovalev now, and it ultimately that's the way it's going to read historically. But why would he come back to fight Artur Beterbiev or Dmitry Bivol? Well, for what?
Peanuts. Yeah, he wouldn't. And somebody would take up, like, if he could convince a Rock Nation to give him some kind of ridiculous deal again, somebody would take a bath on a fight like that. You know, Tony Bellew is the only opponent that could bring something to the table, especially, you know, it might even be in the U.S., Keith, because, you know, Eddie Hearn's got this new deal. It's with, DAZN, a streaming platform. And, you know, the report is, you know, what it's being announced as, a 16-fight U.S. Card beginning in September. It's going to have a budget of $1 billion over an 8-year stretch. I mean, I was blown away when I saw the $1 billion tag on this 8-year deal. So there is real money behind this. And maybe if Ward wants to fight in the U.S., maybe there's real money that Eddie Hearn can bring to the table in a fight like that. But let me ask you about this deal. I mean, I was shocked at this deal. I mean, I had to read up on, you know, what was DAZN and, you know, what kind of cards they're going to try to produce. But $1 billion, Keith, that's huge money in the boxing business.
It really is, Chris. Here's the thing. He's got a lot of money at his disposal in a very short amount of time here that he's trying to spread out to anyone who wants it. So far, what he's found is some guys, and he's reached out to some very high-level guys, including Keith Thurman. What he's found so far is that the guys are reluctant to take the money because, you know, remember, Al Haymon's best guys, the guys, there are probably, I don't know, 12 to 20, somewhere in that range that Al really covets, right, out of all the guys that he has. Do you think after everything Al Haymon has invested in PBC and everything else that he's done in his career in boxing, that he's going to let his top guys walk? When Eddie Hearn comes around with a lot of money, he's going to try to match, particularly for guys like Errol Spence and Keith Thurman and a lot of the other guys that Eddie mentioned that he would like, the Charlo brothers, who are, you know, maybe not quite on the level of Spence and Thurman financially right now, but are very talented fighters. He's not going to let those guys walk. So what Eddie's finding out slowly but surely, and I'm not saying some of these guys aren't going to take the money. It's too much money for all of these guys to turn down. And at a certain point, maybe Haymon won't have enough money to match some of these offers. However, what he's finding out right now is what he sort of found out when he began Matchroom USA late last year. You're not going to come here and have the same amount of success, especially immediately, that he's having in the UK. It's a different market. Boxing is wildly popular in the UK now. It's a niche sport in the United States. You know, people have many other entertainment options and everything. So what he's finding out so far, I mean, look what he's, the announcement was 2 weeks ago, right? Or 2 weeks ago from tomorrow. So basically 2 weeks, he makes this huge announcement. We have all this money at our disposal. So far, what we found out is that he signed Julio Cesar Chavez, or he's about to, and he signed Gabe Rosado to a 5-fight contract over 2 years. Now, I'm assuming that's not the type
of... Can Gabe Rosado fight 5 times over 2 years?
Well, for the kind of money I'm assuming Eddie's going to pay him, I'm sure he's going to drag himself into the ring.
For a guy that gets bloodied up pretty easily, yeah. Keith, that seems like a lot of fights for him.
And I don't want to... Gabe Rosado's a tough guy. He's fought a lot of guys at the top level, usually lost those fights. Whatever he can squeeze out of Eddie Hearn or anyone else before his boxing career is over, God bless the guy. But if you're Eddie Hearn and you have all this money and you've had this huge press conference and you're making this big splash, and so far you've got Julio Cesar Chavez, who is a marketable name, but beyond that, and not much else, and Gabe Rosado, you don't have a lot to show for it so far. Now, it's going to be a long process, and it's going to take some time and everything. And he will probably get some of these guys that are with Heyman to take some of this. It's too much money for someone not to take some of it.
Right.
At the same time, how is he going to get a return on his investment? If you're going to charge $12, $14 per month, whatever it is, it's in effect paying, if you're a boxing fan, it's in effect paying what you pay every month for Showtime or HBO. Mm-hmm. You have some boxing fans now that still don't have Showtime, right? Even if you're, I don't know, if you're a big boxing fan, I don't know how you don't have Showtime, because there are too many good fights on the network to not have it at this point. But there are some people who pick and choose, and now HBO is doing lesser fights, so maybe people will cancel their HBO subscription if boxing is the only reason that they have it. Whatever the case, if you're now asking people to pay $5 a month for the ESPN app, and $13 for Showtime, and $13 for HBO, and now, you know, whatever, $13, at a certain point, you have a family to feed and bills to pay. You're not going to keep continuing to pay, because boxing is such a fractured sport, continue paying this promoter and that promoter and this network and that network. You're going to cut it off at some point. So my question about this new deal is, while he has all this money at his disposal, how is the Perform Group going to get its money back?
Yeah.
Because you have to have a very large subscriber base to justify paying those kinds of license fees. And while ultimately, or ideally, the deal could be worth $1 billion, I was told that I think it maybe 2 years of it, you know, they'll see how it goes after a couple of years into it, basically, before they commit to, you know, dumping more money into it. They're not going to lose a massive amount of money in the first 2 years and continue doing that. No, nobody does that. So, you know, it could work if he gets the right fighters and the right fights. The other problem is, Chris, if he gets, for argument's sake, he gets, just say Keith Thurman, right? Because he wanted Keith Thurman.
Right.
If he gets Keith Thurman, well, you got to go get a high-level guy for Keith Thurman to fight. You can't put Keith Thurman on the network against anybody and expect people to pay $12, $13, $14 a month to watch
it. Why, that's part of how the PBC died, right? I mean, it was, you know, Keith Thurman versus nobody, you know, Danny Garcia versus nobody. It's only in the last couple of years, really last year, since Showtime's kind of taken over these broadcasts that, or these big fights, that, you know, we've had the big fights. And I'm with you there. He's, you know, they've, the worst thing that Eddie Hearn could do is to, you know, sign, you know, a handful of fighters in each weight class and not match them well. Now, I'll give Eddie the benefit of the doubt, because he rarely does that, Keith. I think he's, in his UK fights, it's often, he's often going for the big event. He's looking for those big fights. So I'll say that he's willing to do that. And if he is, you know, look, guys are I agree. I've heard this similar things about guys being reluctant to move off Heyman now. But at some point, if you're not active under Heyman, if you're not making the kind of money, you can't ignore that much money. I mean, they have the potential to blow license fees from HBO and Showtime completely out of the water. So, you know, it's a separate conversation about how, you know, this group gets their money back. But for what they're willing to put on the table, I don't know how guys can, you know, can rationally pass it up.
No, I agree, Chris. It's an incredible amount of money. I mean, what do you, if you're a fighter, what do you care about whether the Perform Group gets its money back, or Showtime loses subscribers? You don't care about that. You have a very short window to maximize your earnings, and then no one's gonna, unless you're like a mega star like Mayweather or Sugar Ray, you know, people like that who are remembered historically. For the most part, people are not gonna, this sounds harsh, but people are not gonna care about you in 10 years. So you have to make the most money for your family as possible, however and wherever you can get it. So I think some guys, again, are going to take the money. I don't know who exactly, but some of these guys are going to take the money. And one thing, Chris, you want to know how Eddie Hearn could make a splash? I don't know that the purse bid will actually get to Friday, but there's a purse bid scheduled, a WBC purse bid scheduled for Friday for the Sean Porter-Danny Garcia fight for the WBC welterweight title. If Eddie Hearn wants to make a splash, and he clearly has the money to do it, if it got to Friday and that purse bid happens and he goes in there and bids like some insane amount of money and gets that fight, that's how you make a splash.
Yeah.
You don't make a splash by signing Julio Cesar Chavez, who hasn't fought in a year. And, you know, at this point,
he's three fights away from fighting Golovkin. Remember, he's raring to go. I agree with you on that. That, you know, if they, and we've seen that done at before. I mean, didn't Roc Nation do that with a big fight when they first started? You know, going in and trying to make a splash on a purse bid could be an interesting way for Eddie to do that. All right, Keith, always appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming in studio and joining me here on the podcast. You are absolutely welcome back anytime.
Hey, my pleasure, Chris. I always appreciate you having me, man.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Eideck for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.